All right, so we've made it to the loudest silent years in history. We've made it to lesson number 11. And this is the one I've been wanting to get to for a long time. We've had a lot of buildup. I encourage any of you who have missed any of them, it's all recorded. And these are built one understanding upon another, so you have the whole history and understanding of why Israel does things a certain way. It's not just happenstance. They didn't just decide to go ahead and, you know, they didn't flip a coin or reach their hand into a bag and pull out an answer. They had reasons why they did things, why they do things how they do. In the first 10 lessons, we talked about it, and this I want to get to here. There is a group called the Zugot, Z-U-G-O-T. And again, this is the loudest silent years in history. So I want to recap what we talked about last time, 2 weeks ago. I've been waiting to get to something. This is really good. And it'll really give you an idea of some things. After Alexander the Great died, Israel's ruled by Ptolemy, and he was good to Jews. He didn't interfere with the temple. He let them live and not come under persecution. And so this was nice. They had made it back to Israel. They had the temple. They decided to keep the synagogues. They had both of them going side by side. It was a wonderful time. Again, to recap a little bit more, they dealt with the issue of assimilation because you didn't have to be right next to the temple to be able to participate in Judaism. You had a synagogue right there to go and meet your fellow Jews. The Jews decided to stay together to survive in the diaspora in Babylon, and that's where they created the synagogue when they brought it back to Israel, to Jerusalem, bless you. They kept it along with the ideas of what helped. The place to come together to pray, the Bet Tefillah. They could come and do, even though the temple is there, they still did the temple prayers that were going on at the time of the offerings. They, if you had a need of someone to adjudicate a disagreement, you had the Bet Din, which commenced certain days of the week. This is why we talked about this during Purim, why there's different days of Purim, because it depended on if you were in a walled city or an unwalled city. When you're going into town, it made a difference. So the Bet Din met on days where the villagers were coming into town to sell their produce and to buy, or to sell their stuff and to buy. And also, that was the day when Torah was read in the public area for all to hear. And so now they're back in Israel. We've discussed this idea that if you walked into a synagogue, you were always surrounded by who? Who was in the synagogue? Who wasn't in the synagogue? Pharisees were always in the synagogue. Sadducees were never in the synagogue. Why? Because the Sadducees didn't, all they really cared about is temple. What's that? They were sad, you see. They were sad. And so now that the temple was back, they even had less of a reason to want to have to come to synagogue. So Ptolemy, when he was good to the Jews, everything was good. But then the Seleucids attacked, took over. The Seleucids and the leaders didn't like the Jews. And a big part of it was because of how much Ptolemy liked them. They conquered this guy, and he liked the Jews. Well, because we conquered him and he liked them, we're not going to like him. We just hate you because you're the enemy, or you're the friend of our enemy. So we're going to go ahead and hate you. And so what happens? So this brings us to the story of Hanukkah. So they desecrate the temple. The Jews rebelled. And you have the house of Hashmon, the Hashmonians, they rebelled. We talked about the miracle of oil and the miracle of the temple being rededicated and taken back. Because of the synagogues being up and running, assimilation wasn't as much of a problem because you had your own people to be with. You didn't have to assimilate into the rest of society. And because of that, it's connected to the great sin of Israel, which was Avodah Zarah, which is idol worship. The word in Hebrew for worship is the word avodah. Who knows what avodah is? Work. So work. So your work, the word for Hebrew or in Hebrew for worship is work. So the works you do for God. Avodah zarah, or the work. Zeh is like that. And ra is bad. Works that are bad. Avodah zarah. Particularly idol worship. Well, this was dealt with too, because now you had your, you didn't have to go to the synagogue or to the temple to worship. You can actually have your own local synagogue to go and worship with other Jews in your community. And you could go and you can go and pray and have all of your differences worked out if there was a dispute. So now we have a time where there's less influence in the Sanhedrin by the Sadducees. Remember, it kept getting flipped back and forth. Ezra, they were discussing. They just came back. They found the scroll. They rededicated the temple. All these things had happened. It wasn't that long ago. And application of Judaism began to be passed down or continue to be passed down orally for generations. And there was a big mismatch of stuff because, remember, they all came back from different areas. Some came back from Egypt. Some came back from Babylon. It was just a big mess. And there was nothing that was unified. So here's what happened. This is where I really want to get to about why we do the things we do today and why you see Israel doing what's done today. The Pharisees had an idea to organize the ideas and discussions and put them together and basically write them down. Write them down, what the arguments were, what the problems were, how do we solve it together, and this is how we're going to go forward doing things, which is referred to as halakha, how we walk, how we do these things, right? So this is how all Israel did it, as a whole, as a nation. Not every individual, but as a nation. So when we talk about things, when you hear people say stuff like, well, the Jews, they rejected Yeshua. Is that true? Yes and no. Yes, because as a whole, more than, say, 51% of them did. So the majority did. But not entirely, because you know there were hundreds of thousands of Jews, of Messianic Jews in Jerusalem within the, you know, the around the time of Yeshua and decades after. But I want to get into that. But the Pharisees thought it'd be a good idea to discuss each of the 613 mitzvot and decide how do we walk this out. Contrary to popular belief and teaching, the Talmud was never something that is to replace Torah. There are people, a certain sect of far-right, uber-religious ones who would they take what they believe above some scriptures. Some, not everything, some. I don't want to get into that. That's a, there's always a radical left. There's always a radical right. We're not talking about any of that. But that seems to be a people, some people hear Talmud and they think that. That's what the whole thing means. They've never read a word out of the Talmud, have no idea how when you, whenever you walk into a Messianic congregation, you're following so many oral laws, you don't even know. And there's people that I know, they do, they say, oh, we don't believe what the rabbis had to say, but yet they, a lot of what they do in their synagogue, that's exactly what they do. Well, why don't you believe it? Why come you wearing a kippah? How come you're wearing a tallit? How come you got a mezuzah? How come you bow when you pray? How come you put your tallit over your head when you're doing the Shema? How come you cover your eyes when you're doing the Shema? How come you say Shema at all? How come you say the Ahavta and the Avot? And I can go on and 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 on. But we don't believe. Don't believe then. That's okay. We're not here to change what you believe. We're here to tell you what happened and why. Your belief is between you and God. You decide what you want to believe. I'm not in that. That department is down the hallway. That's not where I am, which is a blessing. I have to deal with that. So they started to argue based on this idea of teaching people, why do we do what we do? How many know it's okay to ask why? In the right context. If you ask why in a rebellious context, it's different than if you ask why in a, I want to understand. I want to do what's right, so help me to understand. That's totally different. And this hadn't been seen before in Israel. And we always want to keep coming back to this idea. It's never been just about God and whatever God says, that's it. And we got to figure things out. It's always been about God saying something and then saying, however you do it, however you decide to go about doing it, then you just, you go right ahead. God tells you to paint your car and, you know, you say what color. And you decide, you do whatever you want to do. You decide the color or the paint the walls in your house. You decide. Even when it comes to spouses, you know, there is this idea of God sending you someone, God having someone for you. But on the other side of it is you choosing. Go, son or servant, go to the house of my brother and choose a wife from the daughters of my brother for my son. Or that can go a lot of different ways. The idea, it's always about God's connection with his people. It's never been about something separate. And so we got to get that out of our thinking because it always comes up, well, is that God's or is that man's? And that's a whole nother teach. I don't have time to go down that road right now, but it's another thing we can talk about. So what they decide to do is in the Sanhedrin, you always had two leaders. You had one who was referred to as the Nasi, which means prince, or you can look at it as the president of the Sanhedrin. And then you always had what was called the Av Beit Din, who was, and if you listen to the name Av, what does Av mean? Father, Beit or Bet, house. And what is Din? Judgment. So the father of the house of judgment. The vice president. And so what they decided to do was this. We're going to come up with an argument, say that, I don't want to get into a real long example, but there's two people. There's me and Therese. You're in the middle, so I get to choose you as an example. And we're both doing right. We're both practicing Torah. But some kind of way, Therese does something or I do something that totally, I was outside and I was the last one to sit in Teresa's car and I left the emergency brake off, or so she thinks, and it rolled down the hill into a ditch and just blew up. Yeah, but I didn't do anything wrong, Teresa. I was in your car because I was trying to help you. I saw you were coming out and you were carrying a bunch of stuff, so I took your keys, I went to your car, and I took out your squeegee and I squeegeed your windows. But in order to do that, I had to move it like a few feet because the tree was still dripping on it. So I squeegeed your window so it would be clean when you came back. I was just trying to help you. Yeah, but you forgot to put my brake on. It rolled down a ditch. Well, are you sure? I don't know if I forgot. Maybe your brake is faulty and it just popped out of gear. The reason I say that, I have a 30-year-old truck in our driveway. I love this truck. This thing was mint. I've had it for years. I don't want to get rid of it because we have a lot of memories with the family. Especially when Ginger was little, we used to go drop off packages at FedEx and she would ride on my dolly as I was pushing the boxes and stuff. And Casey was it's little inside, but Casey was so little, he could sit in between me and Stacy and we would drive to places. Well, one fateful day I was out in the driveway just charging the battery up and charging the battery on motorhome. We were getting ready to go to camp. You know, Yosemite to camp. So I'm trying to take care of things. And I went in the house and came back, and the truck was gone. And what happened to the truck? And I looked, and it popped out of gear, and it rolled down the hill, and it smashed into our big pine tree in the corner of our lot. Tailgate just totally, the bed all messed up, busted lights. And thank God the tree was there because it would have kept on rolling, and it would have rolled into my neighbor's living room or their bedroom, which was a very steep, and could have killed somebody or, So on one hand, I'm sorry it happened. On the other hand, thank God for the tree. So I went and actually patched up the tree, made sure I could fix the tree. The tree's all right. But the truck, man, I still see it. I don't want to get rid of it because I love it. It has a lot of memories, but now it has no tailgate and it's all bent up. But it was an accident is what I'm getting at. So I've done the same thing to Teresa's car, so she thinks. Well, maybe I didn't do that. Maybe it just, because in my truck, it had a bad it's 30 years old. And the thing is, you don't pull the brake right, I mean, it'll slip and it's gone. And it's a stick, so I had to have it in neutral to keep it running, right? So maybe that didn't happen, Therese. I mean, I'm sorry. Yeah, but you're going to say, what about my car? Who's going to pay for my car? Well, don't you have insurance? Yeah, but they're going to raise my rates. Your insurance should pay for it. You're the one in it driving it. Don't you have insurance? Yeah, but so we go through this back and forth, and none of us have really done anything wrong or hurt one another, right? Well, how do we solve this? Neither of us have insurance. I don't have the money to pay her, and she needs her car. I mean, you can talk about this and come up with a whole bunch of different scenarios. How do you solve this? And it was these type of things that Israel said, how do we solve this? Because Torah tells us one thing, but it doesn't say what to do in this kind of situation. We can't go in the book of Exodus and say, okay, so look, Exodus 1:1, if someone drives someone else's, accidentally leaves their car, and nothing. But it's important to know both sides of this argument to understand, so you can sit there like Joanna's doing in the back like this and say, now which one is it? Whose side should I? What's right? That's just the posture, just like that. I'm contemplating, what is right? Who's to say what's right or not? What if we let Laurel decide? Well, she's known Therese longer than me. Maybe she'll side against me. Is that right? No. She is now. Just that quick. See, exactly. Thank you very much. What about that? Yeah. Well, that's yes, but how exactly does that happen? No, you're onto something there. How does that happen? How do you even get an eye for an eye or tooth for a tooth? What exactly does that mean? What does that all entail? Is it just if I knock out her tooth, she gets to knock out my tooth? Or does it entail something else? How do you decide that? Therese, let me see your teeth. Look, just for the record, see? How do you decide that? That's the problem. That's really good you say. We can get to that too. But remember, in exile, they didn't want to go to court amongst the Babylonians. We see that continues on in the Brit Hadashah, where it says, hey, don't take your brother to court. Why? Because you can take him right to the synagogue and go before the Beit Din, and they can arbitrate this and work out a judgment, and that's it. And you just go with what they say, and that's it. And it's all done with. Don't take him out to the pagans to do that. So here's what they did. They took the 613 mitzvot, and they placed on one side. One of them was to argue one side of it, to do it. Let me rephrase that. Within whatever mitzvot it was, two sides of a particular argument that could come up in that. Like loving your neighbor, let's say. And I don't have a good example in the 613 I can talk about, but the idea is that one person would say, the Av Beit Din would say, well, I think Therese is in the right because of such and such. Then the Nasi would say, no, but you're in the right because of such and such. And they would sit down and they would argue this out before people. Wasn't done behind closed doors. It was done in front of everyone so everyone can see. And the idea of it was, look, Therese, whatever they decide, we love God more than we're worried about this. Whatever they decide, we're going to go with, but it's going to be pleasing to God because God set this ruling body in place. This is hundreds of years after Moshe had the infamous meeting with Yitro, who told him, hey, you're doing too much. You need more help. Go in, you can't. And he had men who could, of ability to judge these situations. So the judges had already been put in place. So let me keep on going with this. So every community had a Beit Din in the synagogue. Some of them were like three people. Some of them may be a lot more, depending on how big your synagogue was. But here's what I want to get to. So they brought these men together, the Av Beit Din and the Nasi, the vice president and the president of the Sanhedrin, and they were called the pairs. So the pairs would argue one side of an argument. What are you thinking, Frank? I can see your... Go ahead. Yeah, yeah. Oh, it is. Yes, he loves Akiva. Yeah. And you know what I love about Akiva? You know what I love about him? Well, he wasn't Jewish. That's what I love about him. His mom and dad were Jewish converts, which is a blessing. Here was a Gentile who became Jewish through his parents, but he wasn't halakhically Jewish. But look at the impact he had on the Jewish world. Side note. So back to this. So the pairs, so a pair or pairs in Hebrew are called zugot, Z-U-G-O-T. So by doing this, it became clear what the proper understanding of the issue would be. And they did it. It only became clear through the argument. They can only understand the other side by hearing it. When you go to court today, what do? Hear both sides, right? And then a judgment is rendered. Where do you think that comes from? From the zugot. This is the what they did. The zugot argued this on one side to the other. They argued what made more sense scripturally. And they were able to come up with what they referred to as case law or precedent that they used to judge things. So there were five pairs. The first pair was, and you'll hear some of these names come up when we're doing, when we're in Perkei Avot, when you're reading what they wrote. Yosei ben Yetzer, he was the Nasi. Yosei ben Yochanan was the Abed Din. Then you had Yehoshua ben Perakiah and Nitai of Arbela, Yehuda ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shotek. Shimon ben Shotek was actually, he was in exile in Egypt at the time when the rest were in Babylon. He had a different perspective on things. You had Shemaiah and Aftalon. And then the last of the Zugot. Anybody care to guess their names? We all know who they are. Hillel and Shammai. So this is the way things came to be understood through the debate and through argument. This is why within Judaism it's constantly talking and trying to come to an understanding. It's not arguing for the sake of arguing. It's arguing for the sake of all coming to an understanding that I understand the problem. Understand what I did to Teresa's car. Understand it. Whether I agree or not, we understood what happened. We see part of this, we see Yeshua when he says, and he talks about the woman with the issue, or the woman caught in the act of adultery. What was the first thing he said? Did anybody see it? Where are the witnesses? Because connected to this is the idea of you can't even bring a case without witnesses. So, you know, Therese, nobody saw me do this. Did you see me? No one saw this. But what also rules me is I'm not going to lie to you and tell you I had nothing to do with it either, because no one saw me do it. But because no one saw me do it, you don't have the legal claim that you would have if there was witnesses, if I were to decide to lie. But I'm not going to lie. But I'm saying all this so you can see the complexity of this. Yeah. There's no witnesses to something you can't, you know. In particular, when there's something big. Look at Yeshua when he said, well, who's, you know, let you who's without sin throw the first stone. Why? Because there was no witnesses. The ones who were there who said, we caught this woman, well, they could have been witnesses, but they didn't stand up to start throwing the stones. So you see this idea of judgment, of witnesses. And if you didn't witness, are you sure you saw that? Or you think maybe you saw it is a totally different thing. Because my life is at stake here. And I talked to you last week that during the time of the Talmudic era, capital punishment became very rare. They were just running around stoning people. Very rare. Why? Partially because of this, because they got together and said, hey, wait a minute. We don't need to just kill constantly looking for a reason to kill somebody. And so, does it go to argue one side to the other? Obviously, it would make more sense scripturally. We talked about the five of them. We get to Hillel and Shammai. The way things came to be understood is through the debate and argument. The Nazi was always the head of the Pharisees and the Sanhedrin. They organized law that had been passed down for centuries. So when they did this, they weren't just making up something new. This is another big understanding. When you see something just made up new, no connection to nothing, it's just somebody decides to do it, let's just do it. No. See it all the time. No standards, no nothing, just made up. I see stuff on Facebook all the time. I was going back and forth with a few people, just stuff absolutely just made up. And then we know who made it up. They saw some post on Facebook, and that's it. It's on Facebook. It's got to be the truth. And they just ran with it. Ridiculous stuff, constantly. And I think, man, the state of the world is terrible. And some of the people in a particular quote-unquote messianic group are just getting famous for this. They want to use the holy name. Now they've gotten into flat earth stuff. That's their new thing. Now they've got into changing a name that doesn't appear anywhere in Hebrew. And it's largely from one man who wrote a translation of the Bible that I don't know where in the world. Not Jewish, making stuff up. And it's sad. No. Making things up. So they argued application of Torah and heard cases. And what developed out of this became case law for Torah. How do you go about doing something? What does that mean in Torah? What does that mean? How does that apply? Well, they've got books and books and books of how the things apply. There's an example in the Talmud tractate Mishnah concerning Orlah. Anybody know what Orlah is? So Orlah is basically circumcision of fruit. It has this idea attached to it. And this idea is don't eat fruit the first 3 years, and gives a whole understanding of when you can have fruit, when you can't have it, how you can have it, etc. But that only applies in the land. Doesn't apply anywhere else outside the land. And it only applies to Jews in the land with. Someone can practice Orlah outside of Israel, the principles of it, but it doesn't apply biblically. But again, this is what you see within Tractate Orlah. And what's interesting about it is that on one hand, people say, well, that's in the Talmud, it doesn't matter. Okay, but on the other hand, we see the Shemitah that the Jews clearly in Scripture, that it matters. They didn't keep it, and the temple got destroyed, and they got dispersed. So which one is it? You can't have it both ways. Why? Because what the Jews decided to do based on what God told them to do is, that's it. That's halakha that God put in place. And Messiah came back hundreds of years later, and guess what he did? He didn't change it. He followed it. He talked about it all the time. Well, I mentioned this earlier, whenever you hear Yeshua say, you have heard it said, what's he talking about? Oral law. It is written, what's he talking about? Torah, particular, Tanakh. All over the place in there. You can't avoid it. We don't have time to get into some of the particulars of that. But as cases came up, they would discuss these cases. An example would be a man with an orchard in the valley that he used. He has a press. He makes olive oil, etc. He brings these olives to the temple for an offering. And a friend buys land above him on a hill. He plants olive trees. So the olives roll down from the hill, from the friend's yard, into the man's orchard. And now he doesn't know which ones are mixed, which ones are his, which ones are his friends, and he's got to take his first fruits offering to the temple. What does he do? Yeah, exactly. So my question for you is, should he be stuck and he can't complete the mitzvah at all because he doesn't know what to do? No. So these are the kind of things they took up to determine which ones, what is what. Yeah.
When these precedents were set, where there's no, you know, previous occasion or other, you know, law on it, were they used, could it be used in future cases?
That's the whole idea of the precedent, that it was set so that in future cases, that's what they would go by. So that was the understanding. So again, when Yeshua came around, he didn't say, oh, you know, it's just a bunch of nothing. Be careful when you see people who halfway follow oral and they don't realize they're doing it, and then they come against and reject it. They're rejecting the laws of what's referred to as the Torah of the Jews. Another idea you see in Scripture you got to be careful with is when it says in the Brit Hadashah, when you see the words, the traditions of the elders, that means a couple different things. You've got to go to the context and the word that was used to translate. Doesn't mean the same thing. And it's not all bad. It depends on which traditions they're talking about. And it's not always the elders. It's translated into that a few different ways, but it's not always the same thing. Totally different idea. And the misunderstanding is that they're talking about, some are talking about halakha or about traditions that have been passed on that are right. They're the way that people are supposed to go. Some of them are things that were, when I say added, I use that loosely. It's more along the line of used to control people that weren't the way you should go. And those are the things Yeshua talked about. He never came up against the quote-unquote traditions. There's at least three words for traditions that have been translated too. You've got to know which one those are too. Yeah, Case. No, it shouldn't be elders all the time. It shouldn't be. It's taken to say something that it's not saying. It's taken to say that it's bad. The tradition of the elders, and the tradition is bad. All that stuff the elder said is bad. That's not what it's talking about at all. And you've got to know the context of that particular verse and look at it, the words that were used to translate into elders. This is back to a Hebrew-English thing, but it's also back to an understanding of Judaism, and it's connected with translations from Aramaic into English, too. It's complicated. All I'm saying about it is that don't automatically assume that's what, because people have taken that to come against Judaism in ways that you wouldn't believe, coming against things that Jesus taught and making him say things he wasn't saying at all. But that's a whole nother discussion where we have to go into a particular verse. Yeah.
Is there any indication, like, whether they are arguing both sides of the case?
Yeah.
How long?
It went on for a long time. Yeah.
Cases go on for, like, days and weeks.
Well, it's a good question, because whenever we read in scriptures, in Perkei Avot, for instance, when it says Rabbi Meir said of what Rabbi such and such said, who was a student of Rabbi such and such, and they said this concerning such and such, what is that saying? They're talking about the same thing. And for generation after generation after generation, they're still chewing on the same thing, because not everything came to a particular. Give me one sec. There's, I believe it's about 5,000 discussions in Talmud, and it's in the teens that were ever, this is it, that's it. There's one thing and that's it. Everything else there was shades. Well, what happened? Well, you know, when you were sitting in Teresa's car, were you mad at her? Were you happy with her? Did she owe you money? Did you owe her money? Did she hurt your feelings? Did you hurt her feelings? And go on and on and on and on. Right, all of that kind of stuff, you know. Yeah, exactly, exactly. Were you jealous of her? Were you jealous of her? She shouldn't have this car. I'm going to go ahead and all. So that's the kind of thing where they discuss all of these things, because in Torah, it doesn't give you specific things. It gives you a lot of generic things you have to figure out. And we see it all through Torah. We see these women who came in the Torah. They came, I think it was seven sisters. and the father had died, the brothers had died, and it was just them. Their husbands are all dead. And what's going to happen to our inheritance? We don't get to have anything. Well, sorry, Torah doesn't say so, you're out in the cold. No, doesn't say that. So they came and they determined what should be for these women. They end up getting an inheritance. Those kind of things. So Torah doesn't specifically say, but God gave the authority to the sages and the men of the great assembly, the Sanhedrin, to make halakha. How should we do it? Amen. So I want to tell you this. It's not so simple. Not so simple at all. And there's a reason to establish case law for an entire nation or for the nation of Israel. How can Israel lead if they don't know how to deal with their own problems? Can't. When you see Yeshua, quote unquote, arguing with the Pharisees and Sadducees about things, look at it differently. Why? Because that's Judaism. They're talking about these things. Wait a minute. Hey, you know, you said this, but look what Linda's doing. I just saw Linda was not Oneg yet, and she's back there. You know, she got her finger in the cake. It's not even Oneg yet. Well, how do we handle that? Linda?
Judy.
Right, Judy. Judy, I saw Linda in the back with her finger in the cake. How do we handle that? Exactly. And you just came, but I'll get you before we're done today. So I'm going to stop right there unless we have any questions or thoughts. And again, we have all of this on recorded too. It's important to understand why you believe what you believe. We're going to get into the next couple of weeks the laws of Hillel concerning how to even decide, how to even talk about Scripture and determine how to talk about it, how to gauge something or measure something. Yeah, go ahead.
Didn't they also record or write or state that this was a majority view and that there was a minority view?
Yeah.
So it's not that you couldn't entirely, but there was a minority view that some people in the countryside lived by.
Yeah.
Jerusalem was a different viewpoint.
It was, and that's real good you bring that up. And a lot of it was divided between Pharisees and Sadducees, because the Sadducees who lived away, they didn't go to synagogue, but if they lived away from the temple, they weren't even at the temple. It was different than Sadducees who lived in Jerusalem, who were the temple was at least right there. They could go and visit. They weren't in the synagogue, but they're at the temple. Yeah. They didn't. They would present themselves, they were supposed to present themselves 3 times a year at the temple. Where you had the Pharisees, they were there in synagogue all, and the synagogue wasn't just open on Shabbat. Synagogue was open all the time. But Shabbat was the day of rest to stop working, but there was always stuff going on in the synagogue, and the temple was always stuff going on. But we have this available to listen to so you can properly, yeah. This is on the website. On the website in teachings, you can go through and everything that we do that's recorded. And so we're going to get into what are referred to as the 7 rules of Hillel. We'll do that another time. But to Frank's, that's what Frank said about the lives of the ones outside of the city were different than inside the city. And that was in response to, gosh, it's right in the tip of my tongue, but I wanted to say, oh, I know what I was going to say.
There was a big push in
yes.
olive oil.
Right, right.
Akiva argued that, what about the poor saps living in Egypt? They don't have olive
right.
trees, so they have to use beets, or they have to use other plants to make
right.
oil.
Right, exactly.
And the other I thought was interesting,
yeah.
kind of cute, was
yeah.
whether or not you should marry your brother's wife.
A big discussion on that. That's called Gigi Boom.
Yeah. Popular in the city with the wealthy guys.
Who can afford a wife? They can afford another wife, right?
Take pleasure, but
the yeah.
in the countryside who was
struggling
to keep one family going.
Right.
It was like, I really don't know.
But look at that, Joel, or Frank. So the idea, sorry, I'm tired. Frank, I mean Joel. So the idea of it is that, are you going to keep the instruction God gave you as his holy people or not? Well, if I have money, I'll keep it. If I don't have money, I won't. So we see these arguments, and Yeshua, there's only it's either once or twice he ever sided with you had the school of Hillel, who was a lot more lenient, and you had the school of Shammai, which was more letter of the law. And there's only one time maybe two. Yeah, that Yeshua ever sided with Shammai. So sadly, it was the Pharisees who said, my wife, she's been making my eggs wrong. I want to divorce her. And Shammai said, that's not right. You're just going to divorce your wife because she, for some small infraction. And so it was the Sadducees who said, no, you've got to give her a letter of divorcement. And you have to basically honor her and do this in a dignified way. If you want to divorce her, you can, but you need a reason. And this is where Yeshua came. He said, unless it's marital unfaithfulness, then you can't get divorced. You can leave her, but you can't legally divorce her. So you couldn't go to the synagogue before the Beit Din and say, hey, I'm divorced from my wife. Well, no, what did she do? Who are the witnesses? Well, you're not divorced from her. You can't partake in, we're not going to marry you to someone else. You can't do certain things in the synagogue. You know, you can't go to the go to the temple and give while this is still going on, among other things, but you get the idea of that. So today, this is why we have, this is why Judaism is all about discussion. It's not about, Christianity has an idea of we're coming to an answer. We got all the answers. That's it. Judaism is always, no, let's continue to discuss this and continue to show how can we love God so much, how can we discuss this more to even be more pleasing and have the best way of doing it and continue refinement. And not just, okay, we got it. Okay, that's it. We don't need to come here anymore and discuss anything. We know it all. We know we got the answer. Totally different. I got the answer so much so that I'm going to create a denomination based on this one answer and then say that all the other 41,999 are wrong. We got it right. That doesn't exist in Judaism. You have three main groups. The Pharisees, the Sadducees, who agreed on, I'd say 95% of things, disagreed on a few things, and you had the Essenes, who everyone thought were crazy anyway. They're off in the desert doing mikvahs all day, and that's it. And you had about 20 different groups within the Pharisees, but they're all Pharisees. You show up on Shabbat, and they're all there at the synagogue, you know. So any last thoughts, questions? No? Yeah.
It seemed like most of the time Jesus was so upset.
He did, yeah.
And he didn't mince any words.
Yeah.
So there was something going on there.
Yeah. No, that's all true. And it can be confusing. And what I would say to what you're saying there is that he said to them, specific ones that. He didn't say Jesus was a Pharisee. Paul's, they were all Pharisees. They were in synagogue. He wasn't saying that to them. I mean, to everyone. He was saying to them he was talking to. And there were ones who kept following him around, causing him problems. And so he's talking to them. Yeah, I mean, he didn't say that about Nicodemus. No. He didn't say that about even someone like Lazarus' sister. Now, this is a woman, but how do we know she was a Pharisee? By what she said, by the words of her own mouth. Because Lord, he said, well, you know you're going to see your brother. Oh, yeah, Lord, I know I'll see him in the resurrection. Okay, Pharisee. Sadducee would never say that. So that's why when people make blanket statements, now I'm talking about a group. Scripture also says all Israel shall be saved. Does it mean that everyone? No, it means the nation will be saved. And so we got to be careful. We're looking at things with a broad brush, and he's always arguing with. No, he wasn't always. He wasn't arguing with Nicodemus. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Do what they do. Exactly. Yeah, do what they're, you know, they're teaching, right? They're just doing things, and they're causing people to, he goes on to say, they're causing people to take put burdens upon them that they won't even lift a feather. Yeah. All the Jewish people, all the nation of Israel, all the Jews. When it talks about the nation, the holy nation. So remember we talked about in the beginning, one of the first lessons we did in the whole kosher pastor, what do we call it here? But anyway, we talked about that Judaism is the faith of a nation. So it's not an individual, and everything is how do we do it? It's not me, how do I? You know, and so because it's the faith of a nation, when Israel, when did they become a nation? They became a nation at the foot of Sinai. It's the last time you ever hear them being talked about as the Israelites and the mixed multitude. They became a nation and became one everything was going on, the commandments were being given, and they said as a nation, that we will do. This is what it says in Hebrew. It says we will do and we will understand. We're going to do it because you said to do it, but we don't understand it. But we're going to do it because you said to do it, and then we'll understand later. And as soon as they said that, that's in the scripture, they became a one, they became a holy nation. After that, they never again, there was no more mixed multitude, because even the Gentiles who came with them there became Jewish. They were totally, not only were they grafted in, they were one at that point. When they crossed over the river, there was no mixed multitude, it was everybody. They were all one at that point. But it's then you got to look at things as a nation, not as an individual, as a nation. People look at what Israel, I hear this all the time, well, look what Israel is doing, look what the Jewish people have done for thousands of years, so they don't deserve God's. God has, you know.
He doesn't deserve God.
But right, you're right. Understand it. But that's one. He's not the nation. He's a. Yeah. Well, the scripture also talks about Jews who say they're Jews. When Paul said that, he had no problem going back with this idea of saying if someone is Jewish, baked into that idea is that they serve God and that they're keeping Torah. That's what he was saying. But there's both sides. You want to talk about Soros on one side, but then there's also the Koch brothers on the other side, or there's different ones. So they're on both sides. But the idea is that, yeah, that's fine. This is why when we talk to Jewish people, we tell them all the time to keep Torah. Because if they're not ready to receive Messiah yet, you're trying to put some on them that they're not ready to receive, keep Torah. Because when Israel keeps Torah, that's part of what causes Messiah to come back and then reveal himself to them. Remember Romans 9, 10, 11, they can't, as a nation, they can't receive Messiah because they're partially blinded as a nation, not individuals, as a nation.